Mr. Jay Sekulow, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments January 7th on the mandate case, and briefs are due on the 3rd of January.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow.
At stake are two Biden administration pandemic efforts that lower courts have at least partially blocked. One is the requirement that big employers make sure their workers are either vaccinated or regularly tested. The other requires that healthcare workers at facilities that get federal money are vaccinated.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
Together, the two cover about 97 million Americans. They're being challenged by religious, labor, and business groups and some Republican-led states.
And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
All right, we're going to try to break this down for you because to be honest, I think anybody that's being fair about this would say this is a confusing situation. What we're talking about is the Biden administration's mandate that requires private employers that have more than 100 employees or more, to have in place a system where vaccinated employees would show their vaccination card. Unvaccinated employees would be required to do a weekly test. So they're not required to get a vaccine, but they have to be tested. The problem, of course, is multiple problems. One is testing right now is very difficult because of the variant that is out there has caused such serious concern that people are getting tested, which is smart. It makes sense. Get tested if you think you might have it. The problem is now you can't get tests. This is supposed to go into effect January 4th. So I think what we need to do, Logan, is back up to what this case is about, where it started, and what the Supreme Court has done.
Yeah, definitely a lot of people have lots of questions related to this, and you can give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. These calls shouldn't be on whether you're choosing to or not to get a vaccine. That's not really the question at hand. The question at hand is, how does this work for an employer, and how does this work for the employee?
Right.
In a situation that we're coming on to in, just under 2 weeks. I mean, yeah. You're even less than that. 10 days or so until this is supposed to go into effect. And really, the rules are blurry. There's not a lot of oversight clarity here and clarity, whether that's coming from the Supreme Court, what's going to happen there, or whether that's what's coming from even just the OSHA rules.
Yeah, well, let's start with what the rule is. So, and then we'll get into what this means. The rule that OSHA put forward requires that employers that have more than 100 employees, that's not in one location, that's in the United States. If you have more than 100 employees, you're required as an employer to make sure your staff, employees, are either vaccinated, or if not vaccinated, that they will be tested once a week. And that information will be gathered and kept so that when OSHA does an audit, that's what will be reviewed. So that is what – is that a fair way, Harry? You do employment law. I mean, law and economic. That's pretty much what the law is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Essentially, the rules suggest that you need to impose a mandate on your employees to be vaccinated, or there's an exception allowable if they are subject to weekly testing.
At their expense.
At their expense, but that is also complicated by virtue of the point you raised earlier. Our test readily available at the moment, and that may not be the case.
Well, it's not the case.
It's not the case for the at-home test. I think there are instances where you can go to a doctor, get that done. A lot of those still do exist. But yep. The prices and your insurance, it becomes a whole other thing than the $30 at-home test, than the $200 rapid or whatever it would be.
And on top of that, and Abby, we'll get in this in the back, Supreme Court issued a series of orders, one of which requires us, by the way, to file a brief on
a reply brief on January 3rd.
Yeah, so we're going to be working right through on that. We're going to get into what the Supreme Court mechanism is, what it's not, what it looks like based on some other cases. We'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. We represent the Heritage Foundation, and we're at the Supreme Court right now. Your support for the ACLJ in these last 6 days of the months are critical. I know, is it six or is it five? Are we down to five?
Whatever it is. 27th, so I'm not good at math. So you can figure out.
Okay.
Whatever it is, however many days there are.
Five days. Your support makes a difference. We have a matching challenge campaign going on. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Brief due to the Supreme Court of the United States. Round two of this for us, January 3rd. More when we come back from the break.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Secular. We are taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, talking about the news that happened during the Christmas break. We were all on text threads because, obviously, the Supreme Court will be hearing the vaccine mandate cases, and that's coming up, and maybe you can break down a little bit more what that means for everyone who's watching. The mandate meaning the employer mandate.
Yeah, clarify. So let me explain what we briefly stated what it does, and what the order from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration said is that if you have 100 employees or more, not in one location, but within your company, you either have to have all your employees vaccinated, they have to be vaccinated, or in the alternative, if someone's not vaccinated, they have to provide evidence of testing, that they tested that week. We don't know, it's not clear whether they test on site, it's not clear how that's done. But that is effectively, Andy, the law as it is right now. Effective January 4th, there's some delays in the enforcement, but that is basically the law.
That is absolutely correct, Jay. That is the status of the law right now, because the Sixth Circuit removed the stay that the Fifth Circuit had put on the case and ruled that the vaccine mandate, if you want to call it that, the testing mandate went into effect. We sought to review in the Supreme Court through the mechanism of a stay. Justice Kavanaugh decided not to grant the stay and to refer it to the whole court, and there is no stay in effect. Therefore, that's the state of the law as of this moment, just what you pointed out.
Yeah, so we filed, along with other groups, but we filed on behalf of Heritage Foundation. Our application for stay was now deferred to an oral argument that's going to take place January 7th. We have a brief that is going to be due January 3rd. The government has until the 30th of this month in a few days to respond to our applications and all the other ones that were filed too. I think there's 8 or 9 cases now. The only bipartisan agreement that has been put in place then is the resolution of the Senate. It doesn't carry the force of law, but it was interesting that they did it.
Well, it's not going to be enacted, Jay. You're right. But that is about the only bipartisan thing happening in Washington, D.C. right now. The Senate voted 52-48 to strike down the mandate, Jay. Joe Manchin of West Virginia, John Tester of Montana voted with the Republicans. So the vote there was 52-48.
Yeah.
But, Jay, Speaker Pelosi has indicated she's not even going to bring it up for a vote in the House. And even if a majority could force a vote, Jay, the president could veto that. So it's not going to resolve the issue. The issue is going to be resolved here through the case at the Supreme Court.
All right. So, Abby, let's talk about what we did here. So we represent the Heritage Foundation, and we took an application for a stay and an alternative, a petition for certiorari. So explain to the audience what we've asked for, and then we'll talk about what's actually happening.
Okay, so we've asked the court first in the application for stay to go ahead and issue an emergency stay that is in line with the first action taken in this case by the Fifth Circuit, which was to issue the stay, which was then undone by the Sixth Circuit. And then petition for writ of certiorari would ask the court to review the merits of the case.
So but right now what we have, though, is we got this is the order that the court issued. And it said that the case is the consideration of the applications for stay presented to Justice Kavanaugh and by him referred to the court is deferred pending oral arguments. Let me stop right there. What that means is normally what would you would expect it was, Harry, an administrative stay to be put in place. In other words, a justice can say, you know what, while this is being litigated, this law is going into effect January 4th. It's going to be difficult for employees. It's going to be really difficult for employers. Put a stay in place. Keep everything status quo until we're hearing this thing expeditiously. They did not.
They did not, and it's very, very surprising. And I think it certainly throws everything up in the air because, in essence, employers need to prepare for the full enforcement of this mandate as of January the 4th, 2022, and then the Supreme Court will actually hear the case, or at least a case surrounding the stay, on the 7th. So it
With
no stay in place, and it's also compounded by virtue of the fact that there are an insufficient number of tests available to employees who have the burden of ensuring that they take a test if they are not vaccinated.
But Logan, you raised the point that the at-home tests are not available, and the order from OSHA doesn't separate the two, but you can get tested.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the clinics and the different offices and walk-in.
It's a lot more expensive.
It's a lot more expensive in the process, and sometimes it takes days. And if you wanted the fast, rapid one, it's $120 to $250 bucks. People are not going to be able to do that every week. So there is that. I mean, obviously, even when the rapid test started coming to retail, the ones you could do yourself, they went pretty quickly. You know, I had a few, and then they were gone. I had kept a few we had in the house when you could get them readily. Now they're pretty much gone everywhere. However, you're going to see more roll out. And even in the Biden's proposal speech said, hey, we'll send one. There's going to be a website. We're going to be able eventually to put in your address, and we'll send one to your house. One. So who knows? I mean, it's a complete mess.
It is a complete mess. And the easy answer to this, Andy, would have been to grant an administrative stay. An administrative stay is not a decision on the merits. It just holds things in place.
But well, I don't understand why Justice Kavanaugh didn't do that. He, as the circuit justice for the Sixth Circuit, had the right to simply say, and to the folks listening and watching, I just want to say, an administrative stay just simply says, stop, hold everything as it is. The law does not go into effect. The things that the Fifth Circuit decided in granting the stay stay in effect. The overruling of that by the Sixth Circuit is reversed for the moment. Administratively, until we can hear from the government December 30th, until we can hear a reply from the petitioners, that includes us, January 3rd, until we can have oral argument, which is January 7th. He could have said, just everybody stopping your shoes, stay still, and let's figure this thing out before everybody's scrambling around to figure out whether they get tested, how they get tested, how much it's going to cost, what this is going to be, what that's going to be. But he did not do that, and I am still curious and don't know why, Jay.
And we're not going to know. And here's the real problem. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, we're breaking this down for you, whether you're an employee. If you're an employee or an employer, call us. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. So OSHA said that this is what they're going to do. This is when the Sixth Circuit decision came down. They said that OSHA will not issue citations for noncompliance with any requirements of the ETS, that's the emergency order, before January 10th, which is only 3 days after the oral argument, and will not issue citations for noncompliance with the standards testing requirements before February 9th, so long as an employer is exercising reasonable and good faith efforts to come into compliance with the standard. So, Harry, if I'm the lawyer representing a company and in their HR office, I'm going to say, look, by January 4th, you need to have taken reasonably good faith efforts to come into compliance.
Absolutely. So reasonable good faith compliance,
whatever that means,
will be a function of, I think, existing practice and existing law. And I don't know the specifics of what that really means, but certainly it does mean that the employer has to begin an affirmative effort to achieve compliance in early January. They have to incur the cost. They also have to incur the legal cost in terms of specifying to their employees. Keep in mind, if you have 100,000 employees, you will have to communicate with all of them in order to avoid these penalties down the road.
What I want to be clear to our audience and to our supporters, and Abby will address this, we did ask for a stay. We've asked for a stay.
We did, yes.
So the problem here is that the stay, it wasn't denied, it was postponed. And the law goes into effect. So how do you read it? The law goes into effect January 4th. You got to make a reasonable good faith effort.
Yeah, I think the employers have to begin all of the work necessary to comply with OSHA before the Supreme Court will even hear argument in this case. And then, as you know, then we have to wait for a decision after oral argument.
Yep. 3 days or 3 weeks or 3 months. We have no idea. Right. So, and it's only a decision on the stay. So then if the stay is granted, it goes back to the courts, Logan, to determine it on the merits, which the Sixth Circuit has already determined it on the merits. Now, maybe if the Supreme Court gives enough substance to it, it won't matter. But this is the difficulty. And it's putting employers and employees in a tough spot. And like I said, I'm pro-vaccine. You know that. But the mandate is just not set up be easily administered.
Especially starting.
To be administered, not easily. I mean, even to be administered.
And in theory, starting the first of the year, first week of the year, in theory sounds good. You're like, well, it's the beginning of the year. But this is when a lot of people are just now getting back into the office. I mean, even here today in our studio, where probably a quarter of the people are still out on vacation or out on family trips. So look, some people are out because they're sick. There's a lot of things happening right now in the world that is causing people to not be in the office right now. And this whole change, and look, there's that whole conversation, really, a minute left, of even your remote employees and what that means for people who are working remotely.
Well, they don't have to be, you wouldn't have to test them, but they do count into your 100.
They do. And if they come in at all at any given time, they're then subject to the
What about guests in your office? What about other things that happen? A lot of times people don't have immediate.
I mean, that's why we ask for a stay.
It's a lot of questions that there are no answers to. I think that's probably a lot of people's
concerns.
Yeah,
we're going to answer the best we can because we got a lot of questions coming in. We're going to start taking those early in the next segment. Folks, don't forget to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice at ACLJ.org. We're in a matching challenge campaign. We've got a brief due in this case on January 3rd. The government's brief is due on the 30th. Oral arguments are on the 7th. The law goes into effect on the 4th. Is this complicated enough? Yes. Could have they made it less complicated? I've been doing this for 40 years, so I'm going to say it. Yeah, they could have made this a lot less complicated. I've been doing this for 4 decades. There's an easy way to do it. They should have issued the stay.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Secula. We are going to be taking some calls coming up here in this segment and in the next half hour. So if you don't get us on your local station, our phone banks are completely full right now. They will open up and will give us more time. So you have a whole other half hour to get your calls or comments in as well. Should we go ahead and take calls?
Let's go in the order they called.
Okay, let's go to Robert, Maryland, on line one. You're on the air.
Hey, Robert.
Yeah, hi, Jay, and hi, Jordan. I wanted to ask you, as far as the vaccine mandates idea, did this idea come from Anthony Fauci for President Biden to try to impose it, or did it come from Vice President Kamala Harris?
Well, the vaccine development itself started under President...
So he's saying the mandate, the employer mandate.
Let me just... Yeah.
Okay.
The vaccine itself was developed during the Trump administration under Operation Warp Speed. So that's where the vaccine developed. The implementation of that vaccine for the first year, not even year, I guess it's been, what, 9-10 months, has been voluntary. And a lot of people have been vaccinated. I mean, the vaccination numbers are in a lot of places are in the 60-70 percentile. The mandate to come into place was the idea. I don't know who was the originator of the mandate, whether it was the president or Anthony Fauci, but it came from the executive branch, which is what makes this so interesting. So the executive branch of government decided that the way to increase vaccination to curb the virus was going to be that individual private employers with more than 100 employees would have their staffs would be tested at a minimum vaccine preferred. So it's really, it is in a sense a vaccine mandate in that you got to be vaccinated. The exception is if you're not vaccinated, you have to be tested weekly. Now, how the court's going to view all of this is the open-ended question. But the employers, like we're having this discussion here at the ACLJ. Our client, the Heritage Foundation, is having this. Everybody's having this conversation, and that is, what does a reasonable good faith effort mean? And, you know, to us that means, I mean, if you're being conservative as a lawyer, it means you're putting in place the things you can put in place to get it done.
That's right. You have to begin preparing a policy. You have to distribute that policy to employees and inform them of what will take place beginning on January 10th.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the court could have made this a lot easier, Andy, by putting that administrative stay in place, but they didn't.
Well, there's no reason in the world, in my view, not to have put the stay in place. It would have simplified matters. We would have known where we stood. The law would not have taken effect until the Supreme Court ruled on it. All it had to do was require the signature of Justice Kavanaugh as the circuit justice. Yep. It would have just had everybody stand still until the court figured it out. But for some reason, I have no idea, Justice Kavanaugh decided not to do that, and he didn't implement it, and therefore we're in this kind of a who-knows-what situation.
You know what, though? I mean, he's not obligated to issue a stay. I mean, I think it would have been the prudent thing to do, an administrative stay here. Maybe there weren't five votes for it. There are two cases, actually. The second case is a vaccine requirement for healthcare workers and vaccine or test mandates aimed at private businesses. So there's two cases. I think it's two separate arguments. It looks like there's 2 hours worth of arguments on the 7th, but in neither case, stays have been granted, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so no stays have been granted on any of this. There's no legislative moves going on, right, Dan?
Not currently, Jay. I mean, there is one active in the House of Representatives. If Speaker Pelosi would choose to call it up, that's the one the Senate passed 52-48. We don't expect her to do that, Jay. And just to be very candid with our listeners, even if the House did pass that, it would go to President Biden and he could veto it. There's not veto-proof margins in either House. I will tell you this, though, Jay. One of the things I'm hearing the most from members of Congress, while a lot of the legal arguments are around, you know, the force of law and the ability for OSHA to impose the mandate, they're really concerned about the economic impact here, Jay. I mean, it's probably the worst time in the world to inject more uncertainty onto both employers and employees. And as you said, it's a murky situation. So does this economy need one more uncertainty? I know the elected officials are saying no.
Yeah, here's the thing I just cannot get my head around, Logan. I've been doing this for 40 years. I mean, Abby said this, you know, you would know better than anybody. I mean, it's the truth. You get administrative stays, like Andy said, are not complicated. You just they're hearing the argument in the case 3 days after it goes into effect. issue an administrative stay, decide the case quickly. They did Bush versus Gore in 2 days. And you have a decision by the 10th, and then we figure it out. And then give us a week to figure out how to implement it. But that's not what they've done. Take another call.
All right, let's go to Philippa, who's calling on line two in California. You're on the air.
Hey, Philip.
Thanks for taking my call. The message you've been sharing today is really great. So my situation, I'm a remote health care worker that works from home for the last 3 years.
All right.
And I've been placed on administrative leave and looking at a termination as of January the 7th. Is there anything that I can do with the information that you shared not to be terminated and to lose
Well, let me ask you this. You're a remote health care worker. So,
yeah, working out of the state of California, because I know every state is different.
Yeah. So is your employer putting in place that everybody has to be vaccinated?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, and they're a private employer?
Yeah.
It's not the state of California? It's very tough.
No.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Is there, I think there's California legislation. Isn't that right? That has actually mandated the state of California.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So their healthcare workers are required in California to be vaccinated. But are you a nurse, or are you giving like telemedicine?
No, I'm a back office worker, so I work from home.
Yeah, but I think it applies to all healthcare workers. We can't give you advice on individual states. I'm glad you called, because you know what it says, Logan? This is really confusing. Yeah. Because there's a person that it would really not matter.
No, it shouldn't matter at all.
I just got a notice from our insurance company, that they have gone to remote because of the variant, okay? Which means things are going to take longer to process. I just got it like 5 seconds ago. Of course it's going to take longer to process. But the Supreme Court didn't issue a stay, so we're having to deal with all of this now, Andy. I mean, this is what is so ridiculous about this, and I've been as pro-vaccine as anybody in the country on this stuff, me and Donald Trump.
Yeah, you and Donald Trump, that's right. Donald Trump, who under Warp Speed invented the vaccine,
yep,
and who really gave us the opportunity to be vaccinated and to at least reduce and mitigate the horrors of the disease if you get it. But you're right.
He got Warp Speed. I'll give credit where credit's due. I know what you're saying. It's just confusing. It's just confusing. And the part of the problem with taking the calls, and I'm glad we're doing it, Logan, is some of these we just don't know the answer to.
And for it's obviously for employers over 100 is the mandate. But,
yes, but not in one location.
And no one's really even clear what that 100 means. Is that 100 people? Is that 100 if you got guests, if you have part-time employees? It seems very vague. And I think that's a problem. They're concerned.
And the penalties are gigantic.
There's a lot of people with 100-ish people working for them.
100-ish?
Yeah, like there are. That's about as confirmed as there were.
We have about 100-ish.
That's a big business, but that's not a gigantic business. That's not McDonald's employing hundreds of thousands. You're talking about 100 people to do this.
We only got 50 seconds left there, but there are employers that are covered by this thing that do have 100,000.
Yeah, Will just said the requirements are vague, but the penalties are not.
Yeah,
Well, not only that, you also have the situation where the penalties have been ramped up.
Yes.
Just for this particular issue vis-a-vis other issues in the workplace.
Let me tell you what this means. We're really fighting hard to get clarity. And we're working right through the holidays to do it. We're coming to you live on the broadcast today. Support the work of the ACLJ. We're in a matching challenge campaign. 5 days left. We are close to last year. We're like within $100,000 of pulling ahead of last year, which was a big year for us. So we want you to go to ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we've got people matching it. So ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We're here for another 30 minutes. We're going to take calls. We're going to answer as many questions as we can. ACLJ. Don't forget to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. Back with more in a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever, this is Seculo. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
All right, so we're live, and we have to be live for a lot of reasons. We want to be live to be able to talk to you about this Supreme Court work that's going on this vaccine mandate. We are filing a brief now on January 3rd. We were preparing one anyways, to be quite clear. We, even though the order wasn't clear, nothing in this case, I will say, has been clear. We filed an application for a stay and an alternative assert petition so that the Biden administration's mandate, which we don't think can even be enforced because it's so difficult to understand it, be put on hold until the Supreme Court makes a decision on the stay. They granted the agreement to hear the case January 7th. The law goes into effect January 4th. Our last brief is due January 3rd. The government's is due December 30th. This is not to be confused, though, with the state mandates, which have already been decided once by the Supreme Court. I'm going to let Abby explain that one, because some states have already put in mandates, and the Supreme Court's already issued on that.
Right. So the case currently before the Supreme Court that we are involved in, it involves the federal mandate. There are also several states that have decided to implement their own vaccine requirements and or mandate. And thus far, the Supreme Court has declined to entertain any applications for stay as to those states. For example, New York is one of those. So we just wanted to clarify there is a difference between the federal and the state mandates. And so far, the Supreme Court has declined to weigh in on the state mandates.
Yeah. And there was interesting there with the who was not part of that.
Right. Justice Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas dissented in denying the emergency application for stay in the New York state mandate.
Okay. So if that's not confusing enough, let's try to answer some questions because a lot of people have. And we're going to try to go through these quickly so we'll keep the lines open. I know this is, listen, we're all having to deal with this as employers, employees. This is complicated. Let's go ahead.
Let's go to John in Pennsylvania. He's about to hold the longest. John on line six, you're on the air.
Hey, John.
Hi, how you doing? You guys do some good work.
Thank you.
But if you're confused, I know I'm confused.
Yeah.
You know, I just have a statement and a question. If it's such an emergency, why does it apply to people, employers over 100? What, do the people not matter under 100?
No, it's OSHA's general jurisdiction on matters like this. Apply. That's a jurisdictional question of 100 employees or more. That is really the way in which OSHA is set up to when they actually, Andy, can regulate an environment.
That's right. There is a prohibition against OSHA interfering in matters less than a certain number in terms of making determinations of the workplace situation.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the things that has been not raised yet, Jay, is whether we even need to reach the constitutionality of the mandate and whether we simply focus on OSHA's rulemaking authority and avoid the constitutional issue altogether. The court could do that.
Yeah, I mean, because they didn't go through rulemaking, which would delay the impact of the imposition of the rule. So here's what we do know. The reason we filed what we did with the Supreme Court in the United States, and look, we're glad that the Supreme Court's going to hear it. So they could have, listen, the court could have simply said, Abby, no. Applications for stays denied. Sixth Circuit law in effect. That's it. Could have been it.
Right. And that is what they've done with the state mandate case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They didn't take it, which left it in place, which tells you what they're thinking. So the fact that they've taken this, I don't want to read anything into the substance of where we go, but we did accomplish that. I want to be clear. We got a positive result in that the court agreed to hear it, and our case was accepted as one of the cases.
That's right.
Is that clear enough?
I don't know. It's fine. See, everything's fine. We're all fine here. How are you? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, heading into the next segment. We do have a completely full bank of calls right now. We're going to try to get through as many as possible.
They're great calls.
Though a lot of great people have called in with great questions. Usually, you ask a question, 12 seconds later, the answer happens, we move on. This is, you ask a question, 5 minutes later, we can move on. So we'll get to as many calls as we can. We know it's a pretty intense time for a lot of people. But again, hey, one line just opened. Someone hung up. 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. And again, get your comments in as well. We're monitoring your comments and questions online on social media, on Facebook and on YouTube. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
And take your calls, but I want to go to Fan on this, and because I, you know, people are asking what can Congress do, and they passed a joint resolution in the Senate, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a mechanism they could use, the Congressional Review Act. They tried to initiate it in the United States Senate. Senator Mike Braun put forward a resolution, and it got bipartisan support, Jay, which is actually, you know, pretty shocking in the current state of affairs. It passed the Senate 52-48. If that measure, Jay, would pass both chambers and be signed into law by the president, it would pull the regulation down. But here's, you know, the obvious problem. Speaker Pelosi's not going to schedule it. And even if a majority of the House, 218 members in this case, would sign a discharge petition and force a vote, and the House would pass it, well, President Biden could veto it. And we're nowhere close to a veto-proof majority in either chamber, Jay. So, you know, the short answer is there's a mechanism to do it, but there's just not the votes. It's going to be resolved at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, look, like I said, I mean, if you're vaccinated, it's not going to affect you, except if it affects your employer and they can't keep their business operating. And then it could affect everybody, the vaccinated or not. So the impact on this could be very significant. Like I said, I'm pro-vax, but I mean, trying to apply this as an employer is impossible, right? It really is impossible right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's take some more calls because a lot of people have been holding for close to half an hour. Let's go to Michael in Illinois on line 5. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. Okay, so I work for a major corporation that's out in Lake Forest. We have locations. We do sales and manufacturing, so throughout the country. I actually work in the corporate office. I have not been there in the last almost 2 years. I've been working from home. Within the last 3 to 6 months, they've initiated, the corporate office has initiated, you have to have a vaccine to go into the corporate office. You have to. There's no religious exemption. There's no testing out or anything like that. So I cannot go into the office. Yeah. And so I guess I'm just wondering if I'm just confused because I really don't need to be into the office, but you know, they're making
this is a good question. Okay, so look, a private employer could say, to work here you have to be vaccinated. I mean, it is that simple. Now, is there a religious exemption? I mean, I think those are tough cases, really tough cases, whatever that means. But a private employer certainly could say that's going to be the requirement of the workplace. I mean, we put in a filtration system in our offices. We didn't have to. Nobody mandated us to. It was better for our employees if we did it. We had a mask requirement for a period of time because we had people we were concerned about that were compromised.
And our governor in the state said we should do it.
So yeah,
we were trying to comply as much as possible.
Yeah, but a private employer has a lot more. I mean, I can answer that one quickly.
Yeah, a private employer can do it. Can decide what they want to do. So that is what that is. So let's move on. You want to take some more calls?
Yes.
Okay. David, who's calling, similar call in California on line four. Line four, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. You touched on some of these, but I just wanted to maybe you have additional information. But yeah. Number one, does OSHA have the constitutional authority to enforce the mandate? Number two, by revealing one's a vaccine status, does it violate the HIPAA laws? And also, if you work from home, does the mandate apply to those who work from home?
Let's start with...
People are asking that question. I think that's even what the last caller was asking about, which is if they're working from home, but they work for a major corporation, are they still required to report in their testing?
Well, that employer had a little bit of a... The previous caller said if he were to go into the office, he would have to be vaccinated. They didn't say he was going to lose his job if he was working from home.
He's still worried about testing,
though. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. This is a three-part question here. So... does it violate HIPAA? That raises an interesting issue. HIPAA only applies to healthcare institutions, and your employer is not a healthcare institution. Having said that, it puts the employer in a very awkward, as an employer, very awkward position to start creating these kind of records, but it probably doesn't violate HIPAA. Does OSHA have the authority to enforce the mandate? I think they picked the wrong agency. I mean, and it didn't go through rulemaking. That's my view, but Abby and Harry, what do you think?
Well, and I think one of the points that we raised in our brief submitted before the Sixth Circuit is you have several agencies that are vested with authority relating to vaccine rollouts, and that would be the FDA.
HHS.
And so clearly what happened here is the administration determined that they did not have the authority for a vaccine mandate through any of these other agencies, and their best shot was OSHA.
Which is it's probably their best shot. I still think it's a very weak argument, but it wasn't so weak that the Sixth Circuit didn't agree. But it's look, whether OSHA has the authority is really going to be the fundamental question, and whether it was structurally, statutorily, and constitutionally set up that way, that's what's going to be decided. Harry,
I think that's correct, and I think most people who look at this particular issue, if you look at the vaccine mandate, if you look at the testing issue, I think most people will agree that the focal point of OSHA's quote-unquote mandate, whatever it is not focused on illnesses that are generated by going to work. In other words, you could contract COVID. You go into a store, you talk for 15 minutes with person X or person Y. And so I think that begs the question as to why OSHA did not go through regular rulemaking so that they could deal with some of the issues. Yeah. I think many of the callers are raising valid concerns that are not answered by reviewing all 450 pages of the emergency temporary standard.
Yeah, but I think they'll come out with a one-page list of what you can and cannot do. I think that's going to happen.
Well, hopefully. With this administration, who knows? Let's go to Kathy in Florida on line two. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yep.
I'm a teacher at a private school in Miami, Florida.
All right.
And back in August, in early September, we got a letter saying that we strongly was emphasized recommend vaccination. If not, you're required to do a testing once a week and get the results in by Wednesday, which I've done with no problem. The problem I have now is that with the new variant, I can't get even close to a testing center. We're talking hours and hours of waiting. There's nothing in the drugstore for me to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's going to be one of the big concerns because, like, when my cousin, she works at one of these testing facilities, has for urgent care work. I was texting with her yesterday. They saw nearly 200 people within the first few hours of them being open, not for a full shift. So 200 people at about 10 to 15 minutes a person to get a test done. When you think about once they get the results, it's only about 2 minutes to swab and get out of there. But you're talking about there's just not enough time on the books to get the amount of people that need to get tested done at some of these facilities. And I think that's going to become the big problem.
And
when they came up with this idea and this concept, that is when no one was getting testing, where they were destroying tests.
Literally,
where they were shutting down
tests.
The testing facilities.
And the Biden administration had the opportunity to order, what was it, in October, Harry? It was
October, and they rejected a plan then in place to make tests widely available, contrary to the experience of many European countries. And so then they imposed this mandate. They should have made sure testing was available widely before imposing the mandate.
But see, the problem with all this is, Andy, if you look at it administratively, this is what I don't get. They put this in place. Employers are trying to figure out what we do here. Employees are trying to figure out what they do. And meanwhile, you've got some industries where this is a serious problem.
It is a serious problem.
Because employee shortages will be real.
It will be very real, especially if they're not there. And on this thing that Logan was adverting to with respect to testing, I live, as you know, in Atlanta, and outside where I live, there is a testing facility to the right of us, and the cars are backed up all the way along Northside Parkway onto the ramp of Interstate I-75, a major artery, onto Interstate I-75 trying to get tested. And when there is an impossibility of performance, do those people have to get, are they going to be penalized?
Yes.
Are they going to have fines imposed against them because they tried and couldn't get tested? I hope not. The law says impossibility of performance should not result in negative consequences to the person.
We talked about that before. The problem with that is, and Abby was right, is you got to hire a lawyer and a law firm to represents the employees, and that could get very expensive very quick.
Well, and that's the complication here and has been all along, is this mandate is not really to curb behavior by the employer. It is to curb the employee's behavior. And so there's a disconnect. If you're an employer and you're being told by your employees that there is nowhere to get a test, as an employer under the OSHA regulation, under the ETS, you're simply required to keep your employee from returning to work until they're tested.
Except you've got to pay for that. And then the employee's not productive if they have to be in an office or a factory or wherever it might be to work.
Precisely.
So you can't do it's not so simple.
Precisely. And so it does create disruption, which is one of the things that OSHA claims to be attempting to regulate here or prevent.
All right, we're heading to the last minute of this segment. Next segment, we're going to take as many calls as we can.
Let me get them.
But also, to go through this real quickly, maybe we can in this last minute, what is the actual timeline so people understand? January 4th, January 6th, they're hearing a lot of January 8th.
January 4th is when the law goes into effect. Employers have to have a good faith attempt at exercising reasonable good faith efforts to come into compliance. So the law goes into effect January 4th. The argument to the Supreme Court is January 7th.
Okay.
No stays in place, so that law goes into effect. The fines are not levied until February.
So you should have a decision. Decision should come fairly quickly.
It should.
In theory.
Because
it's an emergency.
And they've expedited review. But, you know, I it's putting employers and employees in a very, very disorderly, dysfunctional situation.
All right.
That's being kind.
Well, I tried to make it clear for you. I don't know if it helped, but we'll do our best. ACLJ.org, support the work. We got one more segment coming up on Secula. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
All right, welcome back to Secular. We're going to go straight to the calls. We have so many coming in. Let's go to Chris in Nevada on line one. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. Does the normally a stay is granted if there's a likelihood of success on the merits? And if the Supreme Court didn't grant a stay, isn't that an indication where they're leaning? And then for Harry, is it constitutional for the Sixth Circuit to override the Fifth Circuit? Thank you.
Well, I'll answer the stay question. So an administrative stay is not a decision on the merits. So for order's sake, and Andy quickly here, for order's sake, they didn't have to admit there will be a decision on the stay. That's what the Supreme Court's going to decide. But an administrative stay is not a judicial determination. A justice could do that on their own.
That's right. It does not mean that it is an indication of how the justice or the court is leaning on the merits. It's simply a standstill order. That's it.
And then the question, Harry, on the Sixth Circuit, under the consolidation rule, that's what the circuit that was randomly picked.
Absolutely. So the Sixth Circuit decision was indeed constitutional.
Yes.
And basically, it's a lottery in terms of of which jurisdiction gets the case. Yeah. And it turns out it was the Sixth Circuit, which then overruled the Fifth Circuit. And that decision was constitutional, but we think it was fundamentally wrong.
Yeah. In other words, they had the authority to do it. It's just we think they got the wrong answer.
All right. Let's keep going. Let's go to Laura in Kentucky on line six. You're on the air. Laura, welcome.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. My comment is about the nurse that called in that she worked for a company. And they did the mandates. I also am a nurse that works for a major insurance company, and I've been working from home for 8 years. However, on our whole department, they made it mandated that we had to get it. So some quit, some were fired. But my point about this is both of those that got fired and or quit are no, they can't get unemployment because they specifically said you didn't do what your employer told you because you didn't get the shot. That's awful.
Yeah, but it's a private employer. You know, look, we got to defend private employers' decisions too. They have the right to do that. And a private employer can say we're going to have a vaccine mandate, and a private employer can do it. Now there may be grounds for a religious exemption. I think those are very tough cases, honestly. But a private employer can do it. I mean, and the states can do it as well. And the Supreme Court let in place a case coming out of the states. And they did not intervene, and that decision said that the state mandates were held constitutional. So these are not, folks. These are not easy questions. And if you're looking at if this is the hill you want to stand on, understand it could end up impacting the other employers you're trying to get jobs with, because they could be in exactly the same boat. This is not easy.
All right, let's keep going. Let's go moving on. By the way, if you want to call in, we still have about 6 minutes. We may be able to get to you. 1-800-684-3110. No guarantees. Let's go to Roberta in Colorado on line three. You're on the air.
Hi, I'll keep it short and keep it fast. I understand that Congress is not under the mandate. I understand that the post office employees are not under the mandate. Yet truckers who are alone in a vehicle are under the mandate. Can you explain that?
Okay, so Than? Congress and the post office?
Well, this is a private employer's mandate for employees of more than 100 people. That would not apply to individual congressional offices. There's not a vaccine requirement inside those offices, so I think the double standard is a relevant one to ask about. I'm not sure on the post office, Jay. I'm not sure on that one.
They gave an exemption to the post office because of the impact it would have on postal service delivery of the mail.
And the union.
and Logan,
for their businesses, disruption. That's a problem. But for everyone else's, it doesn't matter.
That's basically what they're saying.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
All right, take another call.
James in New York, line five. James, you're up.
Can the families sue the government if their loved one dies from the mandated vaccine?
I'm not a plaintiff's lawyer, so I don't know. But you could have let me tell you, here's another one. What if you get a false negative on the person's positive on their testing and it came out negative? And then they end up suing the employer, who's saying, hey, you made me get this test. It came out negative. Now all these other people are exposed. Yes, this is a plaintiff's lawyer's dream, because it's confusing. Confusion is great for plaintiff's lawyers.
I think James' more question, if we're going to break it down a little bit more, was more if someone can't get it. Because, look, there are people in our offices that cannot receive the vaccine who have real medical issues, yeah. They can't get it.
We have that here.
So what happens in that situation? Do they lose their job? But the thing is, no, because at this point...
They just get tested.
They just get tested.
Right. So this is not a... In that sense, it's not a vaccine mandate.
And that's where the court could get interesting.
Yeah, because it isn't. All right, we're going to get another call. And all I think we may even get another one.
We may get a few more. Let's see. Susan, who's calling California. You're up.
Hi. I am outraged. I'm a nurse, and I also run a healthcare facility.
Okay.
Where all of our patients, pediatric and adults. Is this? Are you getting feedback?
Oh yeah, you're fine. Go ahead.
Where pediatric patients and adults are on life support. The family members cannot come in and visit because our state has mandated that everyone has to have a PCR test to come in within 72 hours. So they can't see their family members on Christmas, New Year's, through the holidays, or at all. And these are children on life support.
Yeah.
Our state is, there's no testing. It's 2 miles long if there is testing available. And now they're saying that they're going to change it so that the family members can use the rapid test, which is notoriously unreliable.
Yeah.
And so they're spreading COVID everywhere. The people in power are so incompetent. In my state, it is
California's you got a mess in California. But let me say something here, though. Okay, because this is what if I had a loved one. Okay, I'm just going to be really honest with people. If I had a loved one that was in pediatric intensive care, and I could only see them if I get the shot, and I'm the parent, I'd get the shot.
I don't think that's what they're saying, though.
Okay.
I think she's saying that everyone has to get tested, which is what a lot of the California rules are right now because of the Omicron issues. So that
but that's they're trying to
the
avoid.
The big question is going to be, are tests available? Can you actually get them? When she said they're 2 miles long, that is not a lie. You're talking about hours and hours of waits. A month ago, it was hours and
private
hours of
employer,
waits.
But private doctors can give you a test immediately, most of them. They have tests.
Like your primary care doctor.
Correct. So if I was the parent of that person, I would do that. Let's be practical on this and not make the. We're trying to explain to you something that's very difficult to explain.
Illegal is really the question.
And we'll hopefully get some clarity, I hope, from the Supreme Court sometime in January after this law's already in place. But I think you got to use some common sense here, too.
All right. Well, I don't know if we're going to get another car. Is this one coming up? No? All right. Well, I think that's probably going
to
do it. Again,
we'll do more this week.
We're going to try to answer.
This is a huge issue for people. We understand. It's very complicated. We're trying to break it down as simple as you can. As we get more information, we're going to get it. Well, hopefully we will.
And we're still in the last few days of the year. It's obviously a very important time to support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. And if you do it right now, in all the receipts, you'll see there is a code to watch our brand new 10-part, over 4-hour series on the last few months and really the last 20 years of the war on terror in Afghanistan called Revenge of the Taliban. We did with some of the top names in government, top names you'll probably hear as presidential candidates coming up in the next few times. Really great people and a really interesting deep dive that we did, and it's available right now. And the only way to get it right now is to donate to the ACLJ in the month of December, and you'll get a code. So right now,
Logan and the team did a really great. It's a great series. We encourage you to do it. Also, let me say this. Our team literally worked through the holidays. We are working through the holidays because we got New Year's coming up. But 2 days later, we've got to file a brief at the Supreme Court of the United States on this mandate issue. Your support for the ACLJ makes that possible. As Logan said, we're in a matching challenge campaign. We're in the last 5 days. We are 100,000. I think I'm almost right to the dollar behind where we were last year. Last year was an exceptionally great month. If we can beat that, that would be unbelievable and incredible, and we would appreciate it. If you haven't donated yet, go to ACLJ.org. And remember, whatever you donate's matched, ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We're going to stay on this issue for you because obviously it's a lot of questions you all have. We're going to try to do that this week. ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.